Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this Friday, August 23rd, 2013. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, wherever you might be. I'm here in central Pennsylvania, and Alfred, I do believe the last time you were...
I'm at the big city of Dallas.
All right. Let's get started right away. A lot of things to talk about today. Gold was up today, up $20 today at $13.97. You have silver up 84 cents at $24.13. Platinum not showing any changes in platinum, and palladium was down $5 today at 753. And just to give you a number on platinum, 1543. USDX today was trading down 0.12 at 81.37. Crude oil was up 1.40 at 106.43. And the paper markets today, the equities. The Dow is up 46 points, made it back up over 15,000 at 15,010. The NASDAQ was up 20 at 36.57. The S&P up 6 at 16.63, along with the 10-year yield. That's moving down a little bit, 0.08 at 2.82%. Seems like we had a great week in gold and silver, but I was looking at last week from Friday, and gold's up about $25 for the week overall, and we have
for this week
about $25, and silver's up almost a buck.
We had a recent low in gold back about the 6th of August, and it at that point was a little bit over, it was about 1282, 1283, something like that.
Yep.
And here we are, we're up over $100.
Yep.
In a little over 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
it's good news.
Good news.
Good news. Yeah.
And it's following along just what I suggested that it would do. It's listening to me, and
must be.
Someone's got to. You know. The listeners are listening. They've been taking advantages of all the specials that we've been running here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. A lot of took advantage of the $2,000 silver special that we've been running, and we'll be adding another special today. So they do have to pick up the telephones, though, and call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we got some great prices on $20 gold pieces. I mean, you're buying them about 150 over bullion coins. That's how good our specials are. That's not the regular price. Those are our special prices, so you need to give us a call. $20 gold pieces, Mint State 63 Saints, Mint State 64 Saint Gaudens also. So good buys on those. Today, Al, there was the U.S. sales of new built homes that dropped 13.5%, almost 13.4% to a seasonably adjusted rate of 394,000, the Commerce Department said today, and that's about the lowest in 9 months.
13% in what period of time? 13% in a month? 13,
yeah,
18?
That's the lowest in 9 months. And sales fell from the rate of 455,000 in June, which was revised down from a previously reported 497. So, you know, their big housing rebound that began last year certainly has come to a maybe not a screeching halt, but just to some degree, not what they had anticipated. But, of course, they're all blaming the mortgage rates. And what's interesting is the rates really only went up about 1%. So we're seeing this big drop just on a 1% increase in mortgage rate. The average rate on a 30-year mortgage reached about 4.58% this week. And that's according to Freddie Mac, and that's up from 3.35%. in early May, and the highest in 2 years. So the impact is on truly would-be buyers. You know what's amazing? It really makes about $150 difference in a payment from $875 to $1,025. My question is, if you stop buying a home for $150, why are you even buying a home?
Are you talking about $150 per month right
yes.
now for monthly payment?
That's what the difference adds up to in that 1% rate.
Well, I think what it tells us is people would like to buy homes, but they're skittish and they don't have confidence that it's
exactly
a good choice. And at least a large percentage of them, a significant percentage, are just easily spooked. That's what it comes down to. They have 13% of them are just saying, extra $150 is more than I can afford. I don't trust it. So they're walking away, and they will stay away until their confidence is restored or prices of homes go down, whichever comes first.
I mean, $150. I mean, that's,
well, times are tough, though.
I know. That's my
really
point.
Are tough, and
that's my point.
Yeah, and it's not only that times are tough. The greater point is that people recognize that they're tough, and what I mean by that is Obama and the people and the cheerleaders in the Congress and the Senate, whatever, all the recovery is just around the corner. We actually haven't heard that too much lately. But that idea is still out there to some degree, that happy days are here again or almost here again, or they will be here soon. They will be here shortly. A lot of people just don't believe it. All right? It's not just about the price of the homes. It's not just about the $150, the extra $150 a month on the house payments. It's about people that are really getting the message that these are difficult times and they are unwilling to take that step. This is part of the mentality that is conducive to depression. People don't want to spend. They'd like to. They may even have the money to do it, but they don't have the confidence to do it right now, which does not bode well for the economy. They're going to have to restore that confidence one way or another.
The number of Americans applying for mortgages to buy homes has plummeted 16% since the end of April, and builders began working on the fewest single-family homes in 8 months. We talked about that earlier this week, and, of course, a lot of the construction that is being apartment buildings, complexes. What's interesting, though, that I saw in this article is that the each home that is built creates an average of 3 jobs for a year and generates about $90,000 in tax revenue. And so
it can't be good news for government to see that the homes aren't being built. They're losing $90,000 in tax revenue for every home that is not built or would otherwise have been built. What do you suppose is one of the biggest problems we have right now, Melody? And there's a million you could name, but...
Give me a clue. Which one do you want me to say?
Say wages.
Wages.
Okay. When was the last time you heard anyone in government say we need to increase the average American's income? And the answer is, more than likely, you haven't heard that lately. There may be some of you in the audience, maybe Melody's heard it. I have not. I've heard no effort by government in recent times say we need to amp up the income of the average American. But I have a report that, in fact, I wrote a little article on it, and it goes into American Survival here this week, this weekend. I have a report that two researchers calculate that since 2007, the average American's income has fallen by 6%. Now, what they mean is the nominal income. In other words, if you were making $1,000 a week in 2007, today you're only getting $940 a week. Because on average, one thing or another, labor has lost 6%. All right? In a period of 6 years. And the article from the New York Times said, oh, maybe this is why people are so glum and they're so, you know, they're disinclined to spend money and so on. But on the face of it, a 6% loss over 6 years is just 1% per year. It's not enough to really affect people. That's not the problem. The problem isn't that we lost 6% nominal income in the last 6 years. The problem is that in addition to that, we have lost purchasing power to inflation. Historically, we've had inflation for most of my life and yours. We've seen inflation. We haven't been too concerned about it as a people because when the price of groceries goes up 10%, you know, that's annoying, but the price of labor goes up 10%. And the wages were rising roughly, you know, in proportion to the increases in prices. So it didn't really disturb us. We had 2% inflation. All right, fine, but we had a 2% increase in our pay. And if we had a 10% inflation, we had 10% in. But that's not happening now. What's happening is we are seeing inflation in terms of the prices we have to pay at the grocery store, for example. We're seeing inflation there. But at the same time, we're not seeing inflation in wages. According to this report, again, the nominal average wage has fallen by 6% in the last 6 years. It wouldn't be a big thing, except we've had inflation. You start to calculate how much inflation we've had. We might have had 2%, which is more or less what government might argue per year over the last 6 years. Maybe that's true, maybe it's false. I did the numbers in the article. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but the numbers come out to where you lose something like $168 per week in purchasing power. You used to make $1,000 per week. Now you get $940 a week, but because of inflation, 2%, it translates to where you've lost about $170 altogether. And you're still getting $940, but it will only purchase in the neighborhood of 850, 825, I don't remember the number, purchasing power as compared to 2007's $1,000. Now you have suffered a loss. It's not 6%. It's like 17% if I remember the numbers from the article. And then if you start looking at inflation rates as calculated by John Williams at shadowstats.com and as indicated by changes in the price of gold and changes in the price of silver, it's not unreasonable to suppose that over the last 6 years, we've had 7% inflation rate, plus 1% loss of face value. The nominal value of the currency you're receiving translates to an 8% loss per year. When you factor it out, it works out to about 40% loss in purchasing power in the last 6 years. That is... It can't, there's no recovery. If if the numbers are roughly correct, and we can debate the numbers, and there might be more inflation, there might be less inflation, but still it illustrates a point. Wages are not going up to match inflation. And as long as that's true, we can't sustain a consumer economy. Joe, the average American, if their purchasing power has actually fallen by 30-40% in the last 6 years, there's no way there's going to be a recovery for a consumer economy. We can't afford to consume. We don't have the money to consume. The consumer economy is dying, and it has to die. And in its place, we are going to see a producer's economy. We're going to see an economy that ultimately has to fail producers. That is to say, people who produce more than they consume. People who save money rather than borrow money. People who don't spend and shop until they drop. They actually save whatever they can and produce as much as is possible. And it's going to call for a significant change in the mindset of Americans. It's going to create havoc for those Americans who think they're entitled to live for free. We've talked in this program about the welfare system, and now some people are making more money on welfare than they could make taking a minimum wage entry level jobs. People on welfare are making more. That's going to come to an end, and it's not just going to be an inconvenience. It's going to be a terrible, terrible shock for the people who think they can live without working. They have no concept, most of them, have no concept that you must produce more than you consume, or you're going to be in big trouble, and you might even starve to death. We are coming to a difficult, difficult time, and it goes to the concept of wages. No one is increasing wages. No one is talking about increasing wages. Why not, Melody? Got an idea?
Well, there's no money.
Not just that. Global free trade.
Free trade.
They have knocked our tariffs down to where the average worker has to compete head-on with the people in China and India and Mexico. And as a result, our wages, if we are going to continue in global free trade, our wages must go down. And as they do, at the same time, the nominal income is falling. At the same time, inflation is rising. They're getting caught between the rock and the hard place, or maybe the rock and the place that has the gnashing and wailing teeth. Right? This is going to be a difficult, difficult situation, and it's not going to make – there will be no recovery. Isn't going to happen. It isn't going to happen. The consumer economy is a dead item. It will not be resurrected in my lifetime. And the only way it could be is if they, and I don't even think it could be, but if they rebuild our tariffs, bring our jobs and our industries back on shore, and provide jobs for the people, then we can see our wages start to rise in proportion to inflation. But if our wages are falling at the same time inflation is rising, we are going to be devastated. So, yada, yada. That's one of the two articles I'm submitting for American Survival today, and the article is a little more extensive than that and a little more coherent, but nevertheless, it makes what I think may be an important point and insight, and that deals with the matter of wages. Who is going to increase our wages? And so far as I know, no one is even talking about increasing wages. As long as that's the case, we're in for a lot of trouble.
The best way to increase your own wages is buy some gold, because that'll help keep up with the rate of inflation.
It'll help them.
You
betcha. You've got to have savings. You've got
to have savings, and that savings has got to be of something that's real, not
real.
Additional
and not subject
paper,
to inflation.
Not digits in the bank.
That's exactly right.
And I don't know why people can't get it. They don't understand it. They fall into this false recovery and false la-la land that the Dow is up over 15,000, and they prefer to hold paper. I don't get it. If you hold paper, get it insured.
Do you know why they don't understand it? because they don't subscribe to American Survival at your website.
No, I think they don't. I think they get it, but I think we're maybe gamblers at heart, and everyone likes to see.
Thinkers at heart. But I'll tell you what else we might be wishing about is that we didn't have to do any commercials, but we do. So we're going to have to break, and we'll get back to whatever wishful thinking we have in just a couple of moments. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Melody Cederstrom. The program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. And Melody thinks you need a special. What you got for Melody?
Well, what we have today, we have a 1/2 ounce gold eagle coin, 1/2 ounce gold eagle coins, along with a tube of 1 ounce silver eagles. You get 20 per tube, and the total package on this is going to be $1,365, and that includes all your shipping costs. So all they need to do is give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think we have one package left of the $2,000 special in the silver. So silver is up how much today? Almost a buck. And it was still priced at a much lower price than this even. So there's one package left. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. That was a $2,000 package on the silver. We've been running all week long. 20 silver eagles, 12 Morgan silver dollars, 12. I got that wrong, didn't I, Al?
Did. I think you did.
Yeah. All right.
I think it was 2020.
2020.
Plus 20.
Plus 20.
There were four of them.
Four of them.
Uh-huh. And I remembered all four of them back a couple of days ago, but that
see,
was
I couldn't remember them today. Oh, my mind.
In any case, it was a good deal then. It's an even better deal now. If you want to take advantage of it, give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188.
Price of
got a
wood.
Caller.
Oh, we do?
Yep. Donald from Pennsylvania. Donald, are you there?
Yes. Hey, I've been listening with Melody for a number of years, and Melody never asked me to call, but people should go and purchase with her, and she does small deals. Because a lot of people think you have to have large amounts of money to make deals with her, but I've been dealing with Melody for, I think probably a couple months after she started, and I've been with her since then, and probably an average, I probably did like $700 purchases an average per time. So they don't have to have, large amounts of money to make purchases.
Well, that's good, Donald. Well, thank you for your call. Melody, I'm sure, will thank you some more. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Donald. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, Donald's been around for a long time. Not that he's old or anything, but...
Not that I'm old either.
But, Donald's is probably going back to 95, 96. And what people don't realize, Donald, is that it adds up over a period of time. You've got yourself quite a nice portfolio right now.
Yeah, and everything's... Well, it's like the only $20 list. Or some of that, if they don't have money to get it right now to either save up or buy fractional pieces up and trade.
Yep, absolutely. You can always trade up, and we're looking to get you into some $20 gold pretty soon. You're breaking up a little bit, Donald, so
we appreciate
you calling in. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Donald. Okay, Melody, what's next?
Price of oil rose for a second straight day today. Gasoline prices ticked higher, of course, as the summer driving season winds down. The benchmark oil for October delivery was $1.39 higher today, or almost 1.5% to close at 106.42. We already talked about the increase of oil prices. Government said that the Americans cut back sharply in July on their purchases of new homes. We also talked about that. And so it looks like they're also cutting back. It looks like they're cutting back in driving in the gasoline. And just another sign to the great recovery.
The illusory recovery.
Another sign is the dollar store. It shows that the dollar stores, they used to be one of the bright spots for the U.S. because, of course, when people were having difficult times, they go to the dollar store. But it seems like people are already cutting back there, too, just like Walmart came out and said that they're not expecting the same type of purchasing as they had enjoyed in the past. So, again, people are cutting back.
Yeah, that's interesting. I agree. And these are leaves in the breeze. They don't prove anything just yet, but we are catching, we're catching these little leaves in the breeze, and we are compelled to ask, are they evidence of something larger, or are they just anecdotes right this minute? A month from now, will we see something different? Will we see something better? And I don't think we will. I think we are seeing the beginning of something here that is not going to be pleasant.
Jackson Hole, Wyoming, you have the Federal Reserve folks out there meeting. They have their annual meeting out there. And the head of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, she says that policies, stimulus to the economies are still needed in key regions, especially in Europe and Japan, and which have struggled with prolonged weakness. And she cautioned the world's major central banks not to withdraw their unconventional support for weak economies too soon. So she's out there, too, addressing the Federal Reserve's annual conference. And she says central banks must carefully develop strategies for scaling back their efforts to keep borrowing rates low.
Yeah.
So there
goes. What does
goes
that indicate? It indicates that she's concerned that banks are going to be reluctant to support these alleged recoveries. It indicates that the bankers are looking at the circumstances. They see the same leaves blowing in the breeze that we do. And they're beginning to say, you know, I think it'd be a good idea to hang on to whatever money I've got. They don't want to spend any more money. The bankers are no more inclined to spend money right now than the people who might otherwise have been purchasing a new home. We talked about the people they backed out of mortgages this in the last month, 13% more than the previous month, and over $150. You would think that $150 per month, you wouldn't think that's enough to scare them off. To some degree, the bankers are living at a bigger scale. Their numbers are much higher and larger, and they're certainly not worried about $150, but they might be worried about $150 billion. And at their level, you know, that may be a small amount of money for them. And yet it's enough to make them a little bit wary, where they back up and say, you know, I think I'll wait. Let's see what's happening. Let's get a better angle on this. I'm watching the leaves blow by the window, and they seem to be headed going south. And I think I'll wait another month and see if leaves are still moving south. And then I'll make a decision. And that result is the economy just languishes. We are, you know, we are caught in a problem that will not be easily resolved and may be inescapable. And it really does look, there's a possibility that we may see this become more overt before the end of this year. I'm not suggesting that there's going to be some sort of a collapse this year. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I am suggesting that we may get to a point before the end of this year where everyone's going to understand that there's not any prospect for a recovery right now, that we are headed into a difficult period. And I don't know when we'll hit bottom, but we are not going back up to the top for some considerable period of time. I've got a quote here from James Heckman, Nobel laureate in economics. And he says, this generation of Americans is very likely to be the first generation in our history as a nation to leave a worse economy and a worse fiscal position than the one they inherited. The Inform Act is a step in the right direction toward informing Americans of the magnitude of the problem. I don't know what the Inform Act is, but I believe Heckman is correct. This generation may be the first generation to leave a worse economy and a worse fiscal position than the one they inherited. And the reason that's important, at least in part, is because the American dream has been from the beginning that each generation would enjoy a higher standard of living than the generation before it. And that each, you know, we would just keep ramping up and ramping up and ramping up. But we are losing the American dream. We are at a point where the next generation is not likely to live as well as the previous generation, maybe several previous generations, and we can reasonably ask, how could this have happened? And the answer is, we have a government that has been seduced by the idea of one world government. They are supporting the idea of a homeland which consists of Canada and the United States and Mexico and the Central American countries north of Panama. Homeland Security is working as an international agency rather than a national agency. Government has knocked down our tariffs and caused us to compete head-on with foreign cheap labor, and the result must be a decline in our income and an end to the American dream. We're coming into this trouble, and we're going to get it. We're going to take it right in the neck because we have been stupid enough to trust our government. We have been stupid enough to allow our government to do things that are contrary to the best interests of the American people, contrary to our general welfare, do things that might serve special interests very nicely, but are terrible for the vast majority of the American people. This problem will not end until the American people make it their business to vote the SOBs out of office, and it almost certainly means that you're going to need a new third party. Both the Republicans and the Democrats are working in concert to damage this country. I doubt that you're going to be able to find any credible candidates from either party that are going to turn around and say, oh, wait, no, oh, no, now I get it. I'll do what's right for the American people. I doubt that you'll find many that will say it, and if you do, most of them will be lying. We're in difficult times, and we're going to see some very strange things happen over the course of the next several years. It will challenge, you know, what was the time? I think it was Steinbeck who made the comment, maybe in the Grapes of Wrath, these are the times that try men's souls, describing the Great Depression here in the United States. I suspect we are going to see a greater depression over the course of the next several years, and if we do, we will once again be in times that try men's souls. And a lot of folks say, oh, yeah, they're going to try men's souls. No, they're going to try men's souls. This won't be an easy situation. It won't be fun. It will be difficult, dangerous, challenging, trying to figure out what is the right thing to do. When is the right time to act? Very difficult to know. What else do we have, Melody?
And, you know, you're right, Democrats, Republicans, they're all the same. Mm-hmm. Already they're beginning to, you know, articles are being published about when they get back and about the debt ceiling and how they can have, how the Republicans can have leverage over the Democrats and mm-hmm. what the Democrats will do. And, you know, it's just like, hello, how they're going to be doing all this negotiating, and Obama is not going to negotiate at all. He's not going to include. I mean, it's that in itself shows and gives the idea that they're all the same, and they're only out for the for what they can do for the and they even admitted, hey, we're going to have problems in our next election. They're already talking about their elections. Yeah. So, you know, that's what they're concentrating on. They're, well, what can I do so I can still get elected? That's what it's all about.
What can I do to con the voters into believing that I can represent them in Congress? And here's why. I've talked about this, I think, on the program in the past, but it's worth hearing again. At least I think it is. Why do people vote for a particular candidate? And the answer is because they think that candidate best reflects their own personal values. I've got two candidates I could vote for. I could go for vote for Smith, or I could vote for Jones. Which one? Well, Jones, he says the things I would say. He seems to have a system of values pretty close to my own. So I'm going to vote for Jones because I assume that when Jones gets up to Congress and he is presented with a bill and they say, Mr. Jones, what do you think? You're going to vote for it or against it? He's going to read it, and he would come to the same conclusion as I would if I were reading it. And the reason he'll come to the same conclusion is because he has the same system of values as I do. Right? That's why we vote for these people. We vote for one, we vote for another, depending on our system of values and who seems to be most like us. But a couple of problems. First, the Congress don't even read the bills that they vote for and vote against. So their system of values is irrelevant, all right? What difference does it make what Jones's values are if he doesn't even read the bills? The second question is, how does Jones decide whether to vote for or against a particular bill and proposed act of legislation? How does he know? How does he decide? Does he call the psychic hotline? Or does someone tell him? Is there somebody from the Republican Party or the Democrat Party or whatever that walks around and says, Jones, vote for this one. Vote against that one. Vote against this. Vote for this one. Vote against. Got that, Jones? Jones says, yes, boss. If someone is telling Jones how to vote, then that's who Jones truly represents in Congress. He's not representing you. He's not representing me. And this is the way the Congress works right now. And so long as that's the case, we are going to be in trouble. Our interests are not being represented in Congress, and they won't be, in my opinion, until a viable third party is created. I'm Alfred Adams. This is Financial Survival. Take a break for a couple more commercial announcements. We'll get back shortly with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Give Melody a call. What's next, Melody?
We have a question coming in. I believe we have two questions coming in. Let's get to the first one. According to Money News, Moody's Investor Service said it might cut the credit ratings of major U.S. bank holding companies, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, cited reduced chances that the government will fully bail out bond investors if the companies run into financial distress. Would this move drive these banks deeper into bankruptcy?
Well, I don't know how you're going to define bankruptcy. They may be technically bankrupt already. It's hard to know. There are reports that they are holding billions, if not trillions of dollars of derivatives, and they're as assets, and it's not even clear whether these derivatives have any real value if they are all as illusory as monopoly money. So who is bankrupt right now, and who isn't bankrupt right now? We can go to the federal government. Is the federal government technically bankrupt? And the answer is yeah. They're bankrupt. They're insolvent. They can't even borrow money from foreign countries anymore. They have to rely on the Federal Reserve to lend the money and keep them afloat. They are so deep in debt, they'll never be able to repay the debt. They are technically in bankruptcy, and they're technically in bankruptcy, and they have been for a considerable period of time. It wouldn't be surprising if one or more of the major banks are also technically in bankruptcy. And what we're talking about, more importantly, is that the credit rating firms understand this or sense this possibility, and they also sense that the government doesn't have the resources to bail the banks out if they get themselves in another difficult position. And therefore, the credit ratings are saying, we're going to have to cut these credit ratings. There's no knight on a white horse to save these banks. If they go down another time, this time they're going down for the count. And to some degree, that may be what animates the credit agencies and causes them to say, I think we have to cut the bank's credit ratings. They recognize they're in trouble, can't pay the bills. What can't be paid won't be paid. My slogan for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I've been saying it, and we are getting to the moment when all of a sudden it's going to make a lot of sense to a lot of people. They're going to say, by golly, they can't pay those bills, can they? What's the second question, Melody?
Adverse effects from Obamacare will fall disproportionately on Americans with serious illnesses, especially those with cancer. And what's more, many physicians will be unwilling to serve Medicaid patients despite the law. Forbes reported in a double broadside against the new health law. With all these problems and delays in Obamacare, is this an indication of additional major upcoming problems?
Well, it's just more of the same. Obamacare is almost incredibly stupid, at least from the perspective, if you really wanted to help people access more health care, Obamacare is not going to get that done. It's going to cut a lot of people out of health care, particularly seniors, because they have what have come to be called death panels that will be incorporated into Obamacare. And when two people are essentially, they're going to ration Obamacare, right? That's been understood from the beginning. It will be rationed, which necessarily means what? It will not provide enough health care for everyone. That's why we are going to ration it. If there was enough health care for everyone, you just walk in and get whatever you wanted. Nobody talk about rationing health care. The reason they talk about rationing health care resources is because the resources will not be adequate to provide health care for everyone. They know that up front. How are they going to solve the problem? Well, let me, before I even talk about how they're going to solve the problem, we have Obamacare that was promoted as it was going to provide free health care for everybody, or at least affordable health care for everyone. And in fact, it's not. It's been understood from the beginning that it can't be. So we have a system that did not provide adequate health care for everyone being replaced by a system that they knew from the beginning will not provide adequate health care for everyone. The difference between the two systems may be that in the past, the people who didn't get health care were the poor. And in the future, the people who won't get health care are the seniors. Because the new death panels, that's not the term they use in Obamacare, but that's the term that's come to be used. These panels will decide how to ration health care. And as a practical matter, you get some guy who's my age, 68, and he has a serious problem. And you got some young kid who's 20 years old, and he has a serious problem. And the people on the death panel will say, well, we aren't going to get much more work out of Addisk, and he's kind of a pain in the buns anyway, so let's not give him any health care, and we'll give it to the 22-year-old kid. And there's a certain amount of sense to it. I get that. The 22-year-old kid. I've had my life. I've had most of my life. I understand that, and the same is true for the rest of the seniors. But if you're a senior and you have contributed in ways to this society where you think, we've been led to believe, I'm entitled to that health care, I'm going to have my retirement, I'm going to be able to kick back, watch the football games, whatever, sleep late if I want to, and if I get sick, I'm going to have adequate health care. We kind of expected that through the years. We were led to believe that would be possible. We are going to find ourselves in circumstances where it's not going to be possible. They are going to to allow the elderly to perish in order to provide services to the young. And I get that. I kind of understand it. But it's still contrary to an implied promise that we've all understood, expected over the course of the last 40 years. And so, people going to die? Yeah. And you know, what are you going to say about it? I guess I get the lesson in all of this is there was never enough health care to go around. And there isn't going to be enough health care to go around. And the implication is, therefore, it's up to you. If you want to live to an advanced age, it's incumbent on you to figure out whatever you have to do. Take care of yourself. Your job. The government's not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Melody's not going to do it. Who's going to do it? If you want to live a long life, if longevity is one of your objectives, then you need to make it your business to figure out what is required to stay healthy. And on the other hand, if you just want to do drugs and drink beer and booze and whatever, smoke cigarettes and get fat, that's your can't. You can do it. But nobody is going to bail you out. And therefore, your credit rating, just like the banks, the credit rating agencies, they're talking about cutting back on the credit ratings for some banks. Same thing's going to be happening in a sense to you and me and anyone else who thinks they can live irresponsibly. Don't have to be careful. You're insured. You're covered. No, you're not. There won't be enough health care to go around. So if you want to stay alive and healthy, better figure out what you're going to drink tonight, what you're going to eat tonight, what you're going to do over the weekend. It better not be something stupid. What else do we have, Melody?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was someone sent me an article about the passing the immigration bill just to boost Obamacare enrollment, but for some reason I can't open the article. But that would be the case. I mean, that's part of the passing the immigration bill is to get all those people in here, not only for housing, but also for the Obamacare.
And also for Social Security.
Yes.
The idea essentially is if we had to fund Social Security right now with money from the people that are born in this country, they can't do it much longer. All right? They're running to a point where we're going to see a serious problem. So what they've decided is in order to support Social Security, and they don't want to admit that a government program as major as Social Security is a farce and a Ponzi scheme, rather than admit that, they can bring in a bunch of Mexicans, right, who will change the culture of this country dramatically. But nevertheless, they'll work. They'll work hard. They will contribute to Social Security. And then in 20 years or so, the government can rob the Mexicans instead of robbing the white people here in this country. That's what I think they're thinking about. Now, that might be a little bit too cynical for some people, but I guarantee you that as a practical matter, that's not so far removed from the truth. Instead of robbing you and me, we'll sucker the Mexicans into supporting us in our old age, and then later on the government will rob the Mexicans. Brilliant. That's what America has become, a kind of hustle. A kind of con where in order to maintain a high opinion of government, maintain confidence in government among some groups, the government has to find other groups that are going to take it in the neck. It's just a terrible situation. It really is. It's a world where we have become seduced by the idea of special interest legislation. And every time we say this group is special, we got to do something special for this group, we inevitably mean we got to do something wrong to the majority of the American people. We've got to overtax the majority. We've got to overregulate the majority. We got to find something that the majority is not going to like in order that we can do something special for some special interest group. And you look back and you look at it and you wonder, how long can this continue? And it is an intriguing question because you'd think that the American people would wake up, that they'd be willing to march, or at least scream and shout, or do something, you'd think that they would have seen this already and understood this already. And yet it appears that the vast majority of the American people are comfortable with the problems that they are confronting right now, and they got the idea, well, you know, the rest of the idiots are going to take it in the neck, but I'll skate through, I'll get past them. And I don't think that's true. I think some of us will suffer more than others in the event of a serious economic problem. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think any of us out here in the private sector, I don't think anyone in the private sector is going to be able, and most of the people in the government sector, you will not skate through. You're not going to get off easy. This will be painful for everyone, and who knows what comes out of that. I have no idea. We'll watch and see, but I guarantee we live in interesting times.
The ones that will fare a little bit better, and, you know, we come back to this day's end, at the end of the program, are those holding gold and silver.
True. And why? Because you need savings. Why? Because the government has been removing, as they've been stripping us of our capacity to produce. They've moved many of our industries and many of our jobs to foreign countries, third world nations. The jobs that could have kept many of us living in an upper middle class lifestyle, they're gone. They're not here anymore. We can't produce because the tools to produce are no longer easily available to us. How are we going to hold up the economy if we inflation is reducing our whatever the value of the funds we do receive are being diminished? We can't easily find jobs where we are truly productive. I know that the government is hiring people and the rest of it, but they don't produce anything. I'm going to give you a list. I'm going to give you a multiple choice. We have four options on here. Let's see. You could get yourself a new car, a new house, a new TV, or some new government regulations. What do you want? Nobody wants more government regulation. Not really. We do want the TV, the car, the house, food, the things we need. The government doesn't produce them. But yet we have to pay for government. It is a glorified form of welfare, and it will not serve us well over the course of the next however many years before. Months, maybe. Months, years, who knows? But we're going to need a big change in our mentality, and we're going to have to get tough. We are going to have to reach a point where we no longer play nice. We're going to have to reach a point where we no longer give government the benefit of the doubt. We're going to have to get to a point where we essentially say, look, USOBs, here's the way it's going to be. And until we get to that point, you know, we're going to see problems get bigger and bigger and bigger. And someday, those of us who do nothing about it will be ashamed and embarrassed. We had the opportunity, we saw what was coming, and many of us have done nothing, not even to protect ourselves. It's wrong. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. Hope you tune in then. In the meantime, have a good weekend, and may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.